is the Chairman for Overseas and Northern Outreach in the Brisbane Diocese, and she will then introduce to you the other special guests we have for this evening. Thanks very much, Marge.
Well, good evening, everybody, and a very warm welcome to our Overseas Night at this 1984 Provincial Conference. It's most pleasing to see so many members, unable to attend the conference, who've taken advantage of this open night. We hope our program, from it you will gain more knowledge of the Overseas Department's activities, as well as enjoying all our other items. We're most fortunate tonight to have with us our Overseas Chairman of the Australian Commonwealth Council, Mrs. Peg Crosthwaite. Peg, who lives on a farm 200 miles northeast of Melbourne, is surprisingly a mother of 7 grown-up children and 12 and a half, she tells me, grandchildren. She has a wonderful husband, John, very Mothers Union orientated, and he's almost an associate member. It gives me great pleasure to introduce you to Peg as our guest speaker to tell us about the South Pacific consultation, which was held last April. For those of you who weren't fortunate enough to hear Mrs. Jull, I'm sure you'll all enjoy this. And later on, if there's any time, she'll tell us a little bit about the conference at Swanwick in England. Before we start, we have a few slides that we would like you to see first so that you'll follow Peg's talk a little better. Now, Ailsa is the screen lady tonight. And now that you know a little bit about the life there, I'll ask Peg to tell us about the consultation. Now, which one do you want there on a bit?
I don't want either of them. There we are. Is that right? Can you all hear me? Oh, could I have my bag? I must have a little, take a little.
That'll come up, okay.
Is that all right? I want my bag if I'm a habit. Sorry about this, but I'm getting a fisherman's friend out of here. Funny chest. And if I have one of these in my mouth, I'll be right. So if I look as though I'm chewing a lolly, I am. Thank you very much, Marjorie, for your warm and kind welcome. I really feel that I'm a bit of a great gatecrasher here. And I'd like to explain to you why I am here. When I took on this position as Overseas Chairman, I had a yen to see as many DORs as I possibly could face to face. And when this golden opportunity arose, as I had been invited to speak at Dubbo and the Armidale Diocese in July, and I learnt that there was to be a conference here in July, I couldn't resist the temptation to write to Ailsa and ask her could I have a meeting here for about a quarter of an hour with the DORs that were present. And she wrote back very kindly and said, oh, do come to the conference. And I decided, well, I'd come for the Overseas Night. And then Marjorie said, well, you'd better put in your 3 penneth and come along and talk to us. And my husband, who trots around with me with this Mothers Union business and shows the slides and fixes the projector when it goes wrong. I do hope it doesn't tonight. He's not here. I want somebody to come over here and hang on to me. No, I'm all right. Does it matter if I hold?
It just goes crackle, crackle, crackle.
Does it?
Yeah.
Can you hear crackle, crackle?
Yeah. Would you rather I didn't? Can you hear me when I don't speak?
This is going to be a funny sort of a talk, isn't it? What's that for?
Hold on to it.
This is the first item on the program, I think. Anyway, we'd better get down to serious business or we'll never see the rest of it. And so I decided that I would come, but I wasn't going to live in because I didn't want to leave my husband. And I felt that was a bit mean. We're supposed to be on a holiday. Anyway, by the time we got to Armidale, he said, I think you'd better ring this Mrs. Elvin and tell her you'll live in. I think you'd got sick of the Mother's Union. He said, I'll treat you to the live-in conference, and here I am. Now, Marjorie also said, now, in her letter, everybody wants this overseas night to be light-hearted. Now, for some reason or other, when an overseas evening is put on, everyone expects to be really entertained, and it's not to be serious because all the rest of the conference is so serious, but the overseas night is supposed to be good fun. Now, to me, in all seriousness, the overseas work of the Mothers' Union is the very heart of the organisation. It's a very serious business. And don't forget that every member is an overseas member to somebody who lives somewhere else. So we're overseas members too. And we are all trying to carry out that third object to maintain a worldwide fellowship of Christians united in prayer and worship and in love and service. So it is a serious business. Still, we can have a bit of fun with it too. Now, last year, I was fortunate enough to attend two conferences, one in Melanesia, which they called a consultation, or as Lorna Oates likes to call it, a consultation, and I also went to Swanwick in Britain. Two completely different sorts of affairs, I can tell you. Melanesia, relaxed and full of fun and games and dancing and singing, bare feet, no makeup, no inhibitions whatsoever. Feasting on the ground, eating strange foods. And at the other end of the spectrum, I went to Swanwick, where we ate fine cucumber sandwiches in a palatial sitting room in an erstwhile mansion house. Very, very different. But there was one thing in common. There was that lovely, warm Mothers' Union fellowship in both those conferences. Now, I'm going to concentrate on the Melanesian conference. And I know some of you have had talk by Owen Joe on this subject, and you may as well realise before I start that I'm going to fall very short of that, but I shall certainly do my best. Then we left Brisbane, I armed with a banner that Jan Marsh had made for the Melanesian province. Somehow or other, I always seem to be landed with the banner. And I had a terrible experience in Melbourne with our Wangaratta banner. The three of us went off to hear Susan Barra speak in St Paul's Cathedral, and I was left with the banner there. Three of us were banner bearers, and two of us were VIPs, and I was just, you know, the one who hung on one side of the banner, and I was left with this jolly thing while they went off to Bishop's Court to have lunch with the VIPs. And I said, what am I going to do with this banner, Audrey? And she said, oh, take it to Bishop's Court. And we weren't allowed to go in the bus. The bus wasn't allowed to stop in Flinders Street. So we had to go by tram. And
I said, you've got to be joking. You don't really mean that. She said, oh, yes, well, somebody's got to take the van. We can't take it in the car. Bye-bye. So off I thought, oh, well, I either stay here till I come back or I get myself to Bishop's Court. And by this time, all the Wangaratta people had gone. They couldn't find me anywhere because I was arguing the toss about the banner. So I came up Flinders Street at 1 o'clock at lunchtime with a great crowd of people and this banner that had a pole miles on. And here I am, walking up the street. If I held it this way, people were tripping over the back, and if I held it this way, I was hitting all the neon lights. And eventually, my one worry was that my two boys, who were at boarding school at the time, might come out of ball and well and see me. Anyway, I eventually got into the tram. This is a long-winded story, but it's worth telling. I got into the tram, and the tram conductor said, "Don't you hit anybody with that." And as I got in, and the tram went off, and I put the banner up, and it pulled the bell somehow. So you see, you know. Anyway, we arrived at the stop where we got off for Bishop's Court, and I got out eventually with this thing, and there was a policeman standing beside, and he said, "If you hit anyone with that," he said, "I'll confiscate it." And I said, "You find somebody for me to hit and you can have it." Anyway, up the hill I went. I don't know whether you know Bishop's Court, but there's this, it's up on top of a hill in East Melbourne. And you have to pass by gardens. And, of course, there were a lot of students running around, and they said to me, "Hello, who are you demonstrating for?" And by this time, look, I didn't care. I thought, blow it, I'll carry it the easiest way I can. So I held it up. And of course, my Wangaratta friends couldn't find me anywhere. And somebody said, "Have you seen Peg? Have you seen?" "Yes, there she is. I can see the banner." So, anyway, I eventually got to Bishop's Court. But that was I swore I'd never touch a banner again. And when Jan Marsh said to me, "Will you take the banner?" I thought, "Oh no, I can't stand it." Anyway, the banner got there, and it's a lovely banner. I've got a slide of it, and Jan did a wonderful job, and the Melanesians were thrilled to bits to get it. It really is a beautiful banner. Anyway, we got to Honiara at about lunchtime, and it was so hot. I hate the heat. In fact, when I told my family that I was going to the Solomons for a fortnight, they were quite prepared to see me come home in a box, because I am hopeless in the heat. Sopa will tell you how much I felt the heat, but mind you, I think she felt just as much, didn't you? It was terribly hot, and by the time we got out of the tiny little airport, we were less than fresh. And cars met us at the airport and took us to St Nicholas House, which is a sort of a resting place, a hostel, really, that the Mothers' Union look after and allow girls to come there to stay when they come out from the country into school. And we were met there by Mothers' Union members, and wherever we went this happened. We had this joyous welcome, and dancing and singing and lays. Now, I've always thought, up until now, what a lovely thing it would be to have a frangipani lay. Well, We were presented with these lays, and you know, I'm a bit short between wind and water, and I was absolutely overwhelmed with this great lay. I'm sure it was the biggest one of the lot, with frangipani, heavy with perfume and very heavy round the neck, and full of little creepy crawlies all round the neck. You know, really, that, and we had to keep them on. I mean, you couldn't take them off. You couldn't hurt the darlings. And we sat there with these lays. Oh, we were so hot. And eventually, after all the dancing and singing, which we appreciated very much, but wished would finish so we could have a drink, and they presented us with this beautiful ice-cold lime juice. And wherever we went, we had the singing and the dancing and the lays and the wreaths and the cool lime juice. And it was worth putting up with everything else just to have that lovely cool drink. And then eventually our hosts, who were billeting us, picked us up and took us to our billets. Now, I was very fortunate. I was billeted with a minister of the government, or he had been a minister in the government in Honiara. His name was Willie Betu, and he had been a finance minister in one government and an education minister in another. So I had a very interesting two or three days in that house. When we arrived there, Willie was there to meet us. He apologised because his wife, Daisy, was not at home, she worked. And there seemed to be children everywhere. There was such a lot of children. They all seemed to be around about the same age. I couldn't work it out at all. Anyway, I was shown to my room, which was really lovely. I expected to be lying on the floor on a mat for my bed, but everybody else slept on mats, but they'd made this bedroom look very, very inviting. The lovely posy flowers on the table and a proper bed, which pleased me. Anyway, I sat myself down and I was waited on hand and foot, and I was given a lovely hot cup of tea and introduced to all these children. And there was a little baby amongst the children. It seemed to be, I couldn't work out to whom it belonged until Mummy came home and fed it, and then, you know, not being all that slow a learner, I realised that was Daisy was the baby's mum. But they only had three children. I never ever really got round to counting how many others there were, but they all belonged to relations and friends who lived out in the country and came in for schooling. And they were all treated just like their own children. There wasn't a crossword the whole time I was there. And they seemed to love them as much as they loved their own. And it was a really wonderful example of an extended family. The ones that went to bed at night never seemed to be the ones that got up in the morning, but that didn't seem bad. I don't suppose I was really there long enough to distinguish which was which. There was one dear little boy whose name was Eddie, and he belonged to Daisy and Willie, and he told me in great, he said he was going to be a priest one day, but he was going to be a priest that played the mandolin. So I'll write to them and I'll follow his progress with great interest. And every night they had family prayers. Just quite naturally, all the children would gather around with their prayer books, and they all had their little bit to say. And this happened each night. One night, Daisy and Willie went out for dinner, and Willie came in to me and he said, "Peggy, you will take the evening prayers tonight." Not will you, do you mind taking the evening prayers? Or, you know, is it convenient for you to say you will take the evening prayers? And so I thought, oh, well. I said, "What time?" "Oh, don't worry about the time, the children will know." And of course I had visions of rounding up the children, that's what would have happened at our place, rounding them up and making sure that they were there on time. But I didn't have to. They were all there before I knew where I was. Eddie said, "It's time for prayers, Peggy." And there they were. And this was just second nature. We've come a long way from that, haven't we? Their lovely, simple faith was just so impressive. I couldn't get over it. It was just nearly too much. And the next day we had a tour around Honiara. We went to Selwyn College, you saw on the screen. And we also went to a palm oil factory, which was the hottest place I've ever been in all my life. And we went to see a rice... well, you couldn't call it a rice factory, could you? Anyway, it was where they were processing the rice. And then we went to a lovely... a feast at a little village called Bentu, where we were again entertained with dancing and singing. And we had this extremely enormous feast with banana leaves on the ground, and we all squatted down, sat down and had this food, which I found very difficult to eat. I think I lived on fruit. The whole time I was there, I couldn't cope with the food. And we all the Europeans found it a little bit difficult. But they were so generous, and they'd walked for miles to bring the food to these little villages. And after the feast, we'd have this big bowl of water to wash our hands, and by Jove, you had to get in first if you were going to have clean hands at the end of it, because there was only one, and the food we ate was very fatty and greasy and, oh dear. And we danced with them, and then we went home. And that night we were to go to the consultation in Santa Isabel, which is an island north of Honiara. And we had to travel in the mission boat, which Archbishop Palmer kindly lent us. Quite frankly, by the time we'd had our little journey to Santa Isabel, we wished he'd had some sort of engagement that he had to use it himself. Never will I forget that journey. We were loaded at the wharf onto the boat, and Helen Barrett said, "Now, we're going to allot you where you're going to sleep." And all the Papua New Guineans were on deck, and there were a couple of New Zealanders in a couple of the cabins. And somebody said, "And Sheila Shepherd and Owen Joel and Lorna Oates and Betty Morgan and Peg Crosswaite will sleep in the Archbishop's cabin." I thought, "Oh, that sounds good, you know," until we got into the cabin. And the cabin was about the size of the rooms we're sleeping in here, maybe a little bit smaller. Yes, I would say much smaller. And we'd all brought our mats and a pillow and a sheet to use while we were away. Our host had given us that in Honiara. And there were two bunks in the Archbishop's cabin, one on one side and one on the other. So we thought, well, the boss of the show had better sleep on one bunk. And so we put Sheila Shepherd up there. She's the central chairman for the overseas department in Britain. And we gave her that bunk. And actually, I don't know who organised all Owen, I suppose. I don't know. It certainly wasn't me. But... Betty Morgan, the president of New Zealand, wasn't very well, and she was quite sure she was going to be seasick, and she'd forgotten to take her tablets, so we thought she'd better get in a bunk too. So we put her in a bunk, or we assigned her a bunk. And that left Owen and Lorna and I to sleep on the floor. Well, there wasn't very much room. There really wasn't very much room. And, of course, I had to sleep in the middle. So there's I went on one side, and me in the middle, and Lorna. But oh, it took a long time before we eventually got down on the floor. I can tell you, we had to settle Sheila first, and then we had to settle Betty, who kept forgetting things, and she'd be getting to bed, and then she'd think, no, oh, I must get something out of the bathroom. I haven't cleaned my teeth, or I haven't taken my tablet. Anyway, we eventually got those two settled, and if I do wish you could have seen Sheila. She has, you might have remembered her from the World Conference. She has a very fair, reddish-coloured hair, and it recedes a bit. A very high foal head. And, you know, I couldn't get over her. I had to admire her because she creamed her face and she put her hair in curlers and she got herself onto the bunk and she lay down like this with her arms folded, just like that, and pulled the sheet right over her so that the mosquitoes wouldn't bite. And there she is, looking for all the world like one of those knights on a tomb in the Abbey of England. Any of you, really and truly, it was absolutely incredible. And she wouldn't have the window open because she felt cold. Well, how on earth she could have felt cold, I don't know. And little crew men kept coming in. I don't know. I think they were probably just curious. But once they wanted some a pillow, and another time they wanted some toilet paper, which seemed to be in the drawers underneath the Archbishop's bunk. Now there was also an altar in the cabin, and Sheila was so terribly cold. I don't know why she was cold. It was so terribly hot, and you know, you'd have thought, being English, she would have been, you know, really very uncomfortably hot. But she wasn't. I don't think she was very well. But we found everything we could find. We put our towels over, and she was still cold. So she said, "Look, have a look and see if there's a blanket in the drawer under the bunk." I said, "There'll never be a blanket." Anyway, there was a great thing that looked really heavy, and it was all embroidered. And so we picked that up, we threw that over Sheila, and so help me, it was an altar cloth. I don't know whether I'm supposed to tell you that. Anyway, Sheila got settled and we all lay down. We had the most dreadful night. It rained and the rain came in, and by the time we got to Buala, which was one of the little villages in Santa Isabel where we were having the consultation, we were rather jaded. And it was pouring with rain. We got onto the wharf and there we heard singing, and there were all the Mothers Union members from all around Santa Isabel who had come in to meet us, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning. And there were all those darlings, lines and lines of them. I gave up counting when I got to 250. And there they were in their uniforms with their bright blue skirts and their T-shirts that they'd had printed for their Golden Jubilee, which had happened the year before. Mother's Union's been in the Melanesia for 50 years. And there they were all singing and waiting for us with flowers, big archways of flowers. And really, it was really very moving. And, of course, we had to say hello to every one of those women. And the ones who had babies had brought their little ones. And they looked to me as though they ranged in age from about 110 to about 6 months. And, of course, we had to say hello to everybody, shake their hands and touch the babies, who screamed blue murder as soon as they saw a white face. They weren't very impressed with us. Anyway, we walked across mud flats until we got to the place where we were to call home for the next fortnight. Now, when we got there, we were allotted our beds and told what to expect for the rest of the time. And I'll just give you a little short resume of what... Look at your watch as though I've got to stop, will you, when it gets too far. I'm inclined to ramble on. The day in the life of the consultation. Now, every day started off with worship. It didn't matter where we went. If we went for a picnic or we went for a little tour around a village, the first thing we did when we got there, of course, was to be greeted by all these women every time we went anywhere. And then we proceeded to the chapel and had a Eucharist. Nothing ever started without prayer. And if things weren't going quite according to plan, which often happens in Melanesia, they have different time from us. We have a clock time and they have Melanesian time. And you know, when we have any sort of ado and somebody's forgotten to put the urn on, there's a general scatteration and a lot of fuss. Not in Melanesia, not where we were anyway. They just sing a song to the Lord, and we'd hold hands, and there was one song that I can remember they sang. I'm not going to sing it. But it said, "You are my sister, you are my brother, we are God's children." I can't remember the rest of it. Sopa, Mike, can you remember the rest of it, Sopa? She's not going to tell you anyway. Yes, you can. Can you sing it? Yes, that's the one. Go on, sing it. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. Well, that's what we'd sing. When things were going wrong, we'd just stop in our tracks and then everything seemed to go on all right again. Now, every morning we were wakened by the roll of a drum at about 6 o'clock, and off we'd go to chapel, to St. Timothy's Chapel, which was about a mile away from where we had our consultation and where we were given accommodation. And we had to cross a sort of a river. I don't know, it wasn't wide enough for a river, but by goodness me, it was rough enough for one. And it seemed like a raging torrent under, and they'd put logs across it for us to walk over. And my balance isn't as good as it used to be, and it was never very much good. And we have a little tiny creek where I cross to go to my son and daughter-in-law's, and it's flat and it's wide, and I find that a bit difficult to walk across. And I was really terrified, because I thought I was going to fall, and it was only very narrow, and these logs were very round. Anyway, when we got there, there were these lovely Melanesian girls with their hands out, ready to take us across. But one would get on one side and one on the other, and hang on to you so tight, and you really felt as though you were all going to fall in together. It was terrible. But it wasn't very long. After a couple of days, we were able to trip across that bridge and get to chapel. Now, the chapel is like the Honiara Cathedral, only very much smaller, of course, with rough-hewn seats and open to the elements. But very, very, very simple, but beautifully decorated with flowers. The Mother's Union, of course, look after it with great love. And every morning they do the flowers. Every morning there were fresh flowers in that chapel. Boughs of flowers in the sanctuary. And it isn't very long since the women were not allowed to go near the church inside to touch it. They weren't even allowed to clean the church. And this is what Mother's Union has done in Melanesia. It's given the women their identity. At first, the men found it very difficult to accept the Mother's Union. there were their wives running off to have these little, you know, meetings. What were they talking about? What were they doing? What were they going to do? But when they found, when they came home, they had learned to cook them a lovely meal, and they'd also learned how to nourish their children and bring up their children and look after their children when they were sick. They accepted it. And the men were there very often at the meetings, and they will look after the children. Now, I'm not saying every family's like this, but it's growing and there's still a lot to do. But Mother's Union is very, very popular in this place and is doing a wonderful job. The girls join when they're 17 and they apparently stay on till they're 117. Of course, I was telling you that not so very long ago, women weren't allowed to touch the church. They were allowed to sweep and clean up outside, but not anywhere near the inside. But now, of course, they do all these jobs. Not only do they do that, but they join in with the service and help to conduct the service. They read the lessons. They read the gospel. They conduct devotions, morning prayer and evensong, always was conducted by a Mother's Union member. And that is a wonderful thing when you think that but a few years ago, they had no place in the church at all. Well, we had the Eucharist every morning, and after breakfast we had a half an hour quiet time with Bishop Tutti, who is a most wonderful person. If ever there's a man of God, that man is. And yet, he was in everything. He inspired us with his wonderful lessons, and he joined in all our fun. He was a real life being a gentleman. He danced and he sang and he really enjoyed himself. He came to every session of the consultation, joined in with the discussion and helped us immensely. Now, after our worship in the morning, I say we had our breakfast and then we had our quiet time, and then we started in on our real work. And the members, the leaders of all the delegations, there was New Zealand there, Papua New Guinea, Australia and Tonga. And each of the leaders of those delegations gave a paper, and they gave some wonderful addresses. I remember Joss Wesley gave a paper on communication. Those Papua New Guinean girls were really something. They're very vocal, very intelligent. And I had the privilege of leading a group in a workshop with some of these girls. And I was absolutely amazed at their intelligence and the way they handled the questions. And the questions that they asked. We had a meeting with Pamela Lano, who gave us a paper on marriage in Tonga, the place of women in Tonga. We had a paper on education by Lorna Oates. Owen gave us two papers, and we discussed those after they had been given. We had workshops and then we brought our findings back, just like a conference here. We found that we all had the same sort of problems, the same sort of hopes for our families and the same disappointments. One of the papers which I found most interesting was one on marriage counselling by Imogen Wattle Morrow, who is the president of the province of Melanesia. She's a priest's wife and she wanders from one island to the other. No money, just
just completely dedicated to her mother's union work. She just lives from hand to mouth. And she gave this wonderful, sensitive paper on marriage counselling. And we learnt that there were a couple of people who were doing a course in family planning, and they were going around the diocese of Isabel helping the married couples. And I was a bit amused because these people were husband and wife. They had 10 children of their own, and they were going from place to place advising these people on family planning. I don't know whether they were telling them what to do or what not to do. Anyway, this was quite an eye-opener to all of us. They were, they're very aware of our Western culture. I hope it doesn't spoil them. So far, they haven't got a drug problem, but they have got a very, very serious alcohol problem. When the people go to Honiara, they seem to get into groups and drink and gamble, and they've got all those nasty things that we've got. Except the drug, and please God, they'll never have that. I found it very moving to listen to their tremendous anxiety about the nuclear testing in the Pacific. This is a real problem. Before I went, I was like everybody else. Isn't it a shame that they're doing this? But to listen to these women, to listen to the Papua New Guineans and see them really so upset about it, in tears about it, because their livelihood was being threatened. The fish are dying. The crops are failing. Their children are being born deformed. And, of course, they blame the bomb, the nuclear testing. And we had a peace march in Wangaratta, sponsored by the Mothers' Union, on Ascension Day. Well, it wasn't really a march because we didn't go very far. We only walked, really, from the town hall to the cathedral. And Sir Frank Wood spoke to us afterwards. And I went off, and my gentleman friend said to me, "Where are you off to?" I said, "Well, I'm going to a peace march. You coming? Do you mean to tell me Mother's Union started protesting and marching?" He said, "You'd better resign." And I said, "No way." After being to Melanesia, I said, "I'd walk anywhere or march anywhere, banner and all." after seeing these people in Melanesia. Now, what else did we do? We had lovely entertainments. We had we travelled on this wretched boat. We went to Malata on the boat. We went. We got there on a very, very wet day. It was absolutely teeming cats and dogs, and everybody said, "No, you mustn't get off the boat. You can't get off the boat. It's too dangerous," because we couldn't take the Southern Cross right in because of a sand bank. And we had to go in a little dinghy, a motorised one, but just a little dinghy. And they said, "No, don't go because it's too dangerous." It was very rough and the rain was coming down in torrents. Anyway, Sheila Shepherd, in true British style and stiff upper lip, said, "Well, we've come all this way. There are hundreds of women have arrived with all their food. We were there in time for breakfast. And they've walked miles and goodness knows what time they left home. We must go." So off went Evelyn Malazzi and Sheila. And then we decided we'd better go too. The boat came back and Olwen and Lorna and myself went in the next boatload. Well, this boat, this little dinghy, was down here and the Southern Cross was up here. Owen and Lorna had got into the boat and I looked at it and I thought, oh. You know, he looked at the length from the boat down to the dinghy, and then I looked at my legs and I thought, I'll never get there, I'll have to fly. Anyway, one of the crew came up to me and said, you need an umbrella? And he gave me an umbrella, a black umbrella, and I hung on to the umbrella and I jumped, you know, for all the, like Mary Poppins, you know. Anyway, we got into the boat and off we went and we got to the, we had breakfast there. The breakfast seemed like something like dog biscuits. Oh, hard. I've never tasted anything like them, and some sort of sweet jam and a cup of coffee. And we had a Bible study in the pouring rain. We were saturated. But you see, then the sun comes out and you dry in 5 minutes. And I can get a much better cold here, you know, all rugged up and nice and warm than I did there. And then we went off to Fuabu, where the hospital is, and we went in the back of a truck to get there. And the road was indescribable, and it was so rough, and we were bruised from, not from head to foot, but from waist to foot. It was terribly, terribly rough. And we went back then to Honiara on the boat and home again. Now, this consultation was carried out in of faith, because those women, simple women, they'd never had anything like this to organise. And here were people, Europeans, coming from New Zealand and from England, from Mary Sumner House and from Australia. And these women obeyed their bishop, who said, now come on, you can do it. You can do it if you pray about it. And we'll all help you, which they did. And that is what happened. And God's not going to let it rest there. I'm sure of that. Because on July the 11th, which was last week, Olwen Jowell and Helen Barrett and Sheila Shepherd had a meeting in which they discussed the possibility of having a South Pacific worker. Now, that South Pacific worker is going to be paid a salary by Mary Sumner House. And Mary Sumner House is going to give them £500 a year for training. And we will help with the travelling, if all goes well. And as you know now, and here's the punchline, Melanesia is now tacked on to Northern Outreach, to our Northern Outreach Fund. And that means that the Northern Outreach Fund has to be divided 5 ways instead of 4. And when that was mooted at ACC, I was very much against it. I thought, no, look, how can we divide this fund up 5 ways? It's difficult enough 4 ways, and those Northern Dioceses, Northwest Australia, Carpentaria, Northern Territory and Papua New Guinea must be helped. And then they raised the levy for Northern Outreach to 25 cents, which pushed it up a bit. And we've all just got to work a little bit harder. The overseas countries, the underdeveloped countries in Africa are increasing. There were 25,000 more members joined last year. In Uganda alone, they asked for 3,000 more badges. In 1 year, they had that's how many women were admitted last year. And we've got to realise that that the overseas dioceses are increasing. They're being divided and there are more dioceses, which means there are going to be more members, which means we've got to have more workers, which means we have to find more money. And in the West, what's happening? The membership is decreasing. So the burden is going to be even heavier. But we can do it. And we must. And I'll leave that with you. Please remember to have your effort for Northern Outreach every year, every branch. And please pray for Melanesia. Thank you very much.
Of the Australian delegates that they were ill-equipped when it came to a national uniform or dance. Also, the delegates were rather taken with their island sisters' way of greeting them. They were part of the Australian delegation to the Pacific Consultation.
This presentation is a suggestion to the problem of national edification at any future South Pacific consultation. We ask for your complete attention with no interruptions. We are Provincial Caritas Representation, part of the Mothers' Union, no provincial divisions. Just call us your selection. God's creation, the Caritas Delegation. We bring to you words of song and dance and action. Sorry it was not at your invitation, but we trust it is filled with illumination through promotion of and publication for our work of friendship. Delegation. We are thankful for the participation in this night, which is a dedication to the overseas and outreach representation of the Mothers' Union. We trust, following this presentation, that the presidential opinion will not end with our execution. Are there any questions? Pleasure
to introduce our member from Cherbourg, Nellie Sheridan, who's going to tell you a little bit about Cherbourg and Mother's Union. Do you want me to stand with you?
Yes, all right. Good night, ladies. I'm talking about Cherbourg. We have a Mother's Union branch, and we have it by not all Cherbourg alone. So I'll tell you that there is a place that's going up. There is modern houses, and there's modern schools, and the children, the high school students go to Mergen. We have a supermarket. We have a pottery. The hospital is run by the Kingroy board, we have a lot of things there. It is modern, and all the modern houses are built, and we are
We had the opening of the shelter last week for little children that a couple is looking after that the parents didn't want. So we are getting on quite well. But we are going to get some more Mothers Union ladies later on. We've only started a couple of years ago. It was, but I wasn't at Sherberg. I was up at Woorumbinda when the Mothers Union started up, and I came back and we started over again.
Thank you very much. Now, last but not least, are our Thursday Island ladies, and Lena Passy and her ladies are going to entertain us for a short while. Lena Passy is the diocesan president of Carpentaria, and they brought their banner down with them for us to see. You ready, ladies? Here they come.
Union. As you can see, the Mothers Union have been really strong in Carpentaria, but it's mostly in the Torres Strait. We just started one more branch down in the Gulf, and we've got Nancy Dick here. Before we're going to sing you one hymn, we usually start off with a hymn. It's our custom in the islands. I did talk about the 1st of July. I think some of you are wondering, what is the 1st of July? 1st of July is very important to us as Torres Strait Islanders because it was on that day that the gospel came to us. And it was brought to us by people from Melanesia. And before, we used to worship an idol gods in the island. Each island got a different god. And when the gospel came, it's like Jesus said in the Bible, it came not to destroy, but to fulfill. And it did fulfill it. So we're going to sing you a hymn, which means the first verse says, mean that, come to me, Jesus, come to me. The second one is, life is yours, life is yours, your life. And the last, the fourth verse is, I believe in Jesus, I believe in Jesus. And the last is, Alleluia.
you. And the next one, we'll ask you all to join us. It's much
easier. Thank you.
I was telling them how lovely their headgear is. And Linda's going to tell you what it means wearing this little white bandage round their leg.
It's just a decoration. Some people thought that it's to show our legs, but it's just a decoration. Some of us use it around our hands. And the flower in the head, in the Torres Strait, when we use flower, it doesn't mean anything. It just flowers in our head, in our hair. But it doesn't mean anything like the Hawaiian people and Tahitian, you know, you've got to put flowers certain ways. We just put flowers. When we do our dancing, this is what we use.
we bang it together with the other kind of drums that you see and a rattle that we use to carry. It's not a baby rattle, it's our rattle. This one? Seeds from a creeper in the bush. I won't take Peg to look for it because I don't think she can climb up. No, this is just a decoration too.
Can we say a prayer before we close?
Yes, certainly.
Our
we're
session.
Right.
We will say together our centenary prayer to close our session. We will come together. Let us pray. O Christ, the light of the world, we thank you that your light shines among us. Draw us ever closer to you, so that free from sin, we may show forth the light of your glory in the world. Amen.
Well, that concludes our program for our open night. Oh, I'll get them down. They say, can you hear at the back now? Well, that concludes our program for our open overseas night. We do hope you've enjoyed it and understand a little more of the overseas work that's done by the department. Before closing this night, there are a number of people I wish to thank. The ladies who helped decorate this afternoon, the branches who supplied posters, Allera, Stanthorpe, Wynnum, Yeronga, especially those done by Mrs. Reen Johnson. She did those very lovely ones with all the writing. There were just too many for us to put up. We just ran out of space. I hope you've all had a look at the posters, because there was some tremendous amount of work gone into them. Chris Martin from my own branch, Caboolture, for her help with the third object poster, Mrs. Gwen Hadlow, Mrs. Olwyn Jull, the Thursday Island ladies, Nellie Sheridan from Sherberg for their tea towels and artefacts lent for the displays, ABM for the slides on Honiara, Caritas for their item, Lena Passy and all her members for theirs, and to Erna Lee for her help and advice in the last few months. Her reward, I'm sure, will be a very large telephone account. To you all, and any way I may have missed, my sincere thanks. And now I'd like to ask Mrs. Maureen Tariff, our overseas representative from Darwin, to move a vote of thanks to Mrs. Peg Crosthwaite. Will you come up, Peg?
Mrs. Crosthwaite, on behalf of all the ladies, I would like to thank you very much for speaking to us this evening. It has been most interesting and a very happy time. I'd like you to accept this gift as a token of our appreciation.
Oh, here come. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maureen. I can assure you it's been a great pleasure and a joy for me to be here and to meet you and all those lovely ladies from Carpentaria. It's been a very, very happy conference and I shall treasure this. Thank you very much. Rip. And remember, I saw this notice coming along the road on the way up from Armandale. I'm a bit of an opportunist. So I'll just fit it in as a last, just one last little thought. That the world is a very fragile place. Handle it with prayer.
Thank you very much. I'll let you get it back up. This This evening's program has been recorded and is available at the conclusion of the meeting for $3 from Sound Words Tape Ministry. And if you're interested, would you see Dorothy Baird? And also, you can buy Dr. Lois Anderson's records that have been taped too. Well, just as a final closing, I thought we'd say a prayer for members overseas. Stay where you are seated. Eternal Father, whose love is over all thy children, look favourably, we beseech thee, upon our members overseas, especially those who live in lonely places. Strengthen them in their faith and in the fellowship of sacrament and prayer. Preserve them in loyalty to the great ideals they have set before them, and fill their hearts with love and joy in the Lord Jesus, who liveth and reigneth with thee in the unity of your Holy Spirit, one God, blessed forever. Amen. Thank you very much, ladies.
This is where we leave you, trusting you've enjoyed the evening, and those who re-listen to the cassette will relive the memory of this eventful evening at the overseas session. From Sound Words, we send greetings from Des and Dorothy Baird here in Brisbane. If you do want any of the other cassettes of Dr. Lois Anderson, feel free to write to us at any time. The address will be on the cassette.